What do you think brought you from there to where you are now?
The plan to come to the UAE was to come and look for a job, not start a business. We were the first digital wallet only. You had a lot of ones with banks or exchange houses. You didn't have a pure fintech play.
What motivated you add, for example, at the start of your journey?
When I arrived in the UAE, you've got the third largest retail remittance market in the world. And so I thought there'd been more solutions already. I saw a gap in the market and...
What makes HatPay different?
Everyone loves an idea. The execution is the game. Yeah. We wanted to drive financial inclusion by offering a retail and a corporate solution. We're the only fintech globally to have a UAE and Pakistan license.
Mm. What would you recommend to, you, let's say, those who are in the fintech industry or probably those who are in the leadership?
You've got to set a vision and a strategy. You have to bring in people and get them to row together. And you have to bring in the money.
Hi, everyone, and this is a C-Suite podcast where we feature conversations with the leaders in different industries in the UAE about their motivations, about their journeys to success, about what makes them leaders as they are every day. And in this episode, we're talking to Kevin Kilty. Kevin is the CEO and the founder of HatPay. HatPay is a fully licensed digital wallet. Kevin is known for his passion to drive financial inclusion. When he arrived to the UAE 4 years back, he got stuck with the lack of simple, convenient, low-cost digital option. And that's when he started working at HatPay, and he introduced his solution to the market 2 years later. Welcome, welcome, Kevin. I'm really excited about this conversation, and let's make it fun, casual, and very insightful too.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks for having me.
Let me drop you a quick question before we move to the main conversation. Are you more of an in-person or virtual meetings leader? Oh, and why?
Yeah, easy. In-person.
Why is that?
90% of communication is non-verbal. Zoom is very convenient, as are all the kind of conference facilities, but it's the subtle things. It's the body language. Everyone's more engaged in person. So as much as you can. So yeah, I split my time between here and London, but Dubai, UAE, it's really important to be on the ground.
Yeah, I agree with you. No, I like the in-person meeting, so that's why we're recording in person today. So I was trying to search some information about your journey, your profile, your background, and I didn't find that much in the internet. So maybe I'll give the stage to you. If
sure.
You tell us a little more about your journey to where you are today from where you came from.
Yeah. So I grew up in the UK, emigrated from Ireland when I was young, but grew up really near London and worked in banking before I moved out to the Middle East. And I'd done quite a lot of work in microfinance. I'd been out on the ground there, and I'd been really interested in how that worked. And so I got to 30 and had that kind of existential crisis about, gosh, what am I going to do? It's about time to find a real job. And so I wanted to move out to the Middle East because I'd been here as early as 2007, kind of working in kind of different areas. I was really interested in trying to move out to the Middle East and try and find more of an impact investment fund operating more in frontier markets. I'd been on the ground previously in Palestine, in Libya, and I was really interested in working in a private market solution to drive a kind of more social impact agenda. And so the plan to come to the UAE was to come and look for a job, not start a business. But when I was here, I saw a gap in the market, and a few years later, here we are.
What motivated you at, for example, at the start of your journey to sort of think even about the financial inclusion and the potential gaps that you would be looking for in the markets? So did you have any kind of mentors?
I think the background in banking had a good understanding of financial services. The background around financial inclusion was I'd read the book Banker to the Poor by Professor Muhammad Yunus at university. He won the Nobel Peace Prize for his work in microfinance back in 2006. And I thought it was such an incredible solution. It was a grassroots solution. And it was someone who was native from Bangladesh, but had traveled all around the world and been a Fulbright scholar. So someone who was immensely intelligent and successful.
Yeah.
And then had built their solution from the ground up in Bangladesh. And so my kind of view was, after I'd seen that, I wanted to see if it worked in reality. And so I started volunteering with microfinance NGOs and begun from there to get a good understanding of microfinance. And so I was very keen to move into that kind of space. And so that was the genesis of where kind of HubPay came from. When I arrived in the UAE, I think my understanding and my, you know, my belief would have been that it would have already been done, because you've got the third largest retail remittance market in the world. And so I thought there'd been more solutions already. And the reason that hadn't happened was a lack of regulatory framework. And that shifted in 2019 mm-hmm. when ADGM brought out a license.
That's right. It's interesting that how it works. Like, you get passionate about something, you probably turn that into a potential dream, and then that dream might actually come true. So a question to you, say, what were the biggest probably challenges or the milestones you overcame from the moment you decided to set up your business to the moment, let's say, you got your first fundraise?
Yeah, I think every startup has a lot of challenges. You come in with all of us with our own skill sets, and there'll be some stuff you're good at and some stuff you're going to need to work on a lot. I had a financial background, so fundraising, financial planning, regulation, probably easier. The product strategy, mm-hmm. I wouldn't say it was lacking. I would say it's more non-existent. Mm-hmm. And so you had to really get up that curve pretty quickly, right. But then rely on other team members to help you build it out.
But what helped you? Let's say, is it more of your ability to take risks or be committed, be consistent? Or what do you think brought you from there to where you are now?
Well, I think anyone who's doing a startup is a serious risk taker.
Really?
I think on a risk-weighted basis of returns, there's no way you'd be an entrepreneur, because the failure rate's so high.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you have a disproportionate approach to risk than most people would have in terms of your appetite for it. So I think that's a kind of starting point. You know, you hear about the ones that have just made it, and we're still in our early stages. You don't hear about all the ones that don't make it. And I think that's important to keep that in that kind of context there. So yeah, I think you're happy to take on risk. You're happy to grind it out. I would say what was certainly formative for me and the business in early stages was going through an accelerator program. We went through Startup Bootcamp. They did an accelerator program in the DIC in Dubai. And that was really formational, I think, for us.
So it was like a game changer for you. So did it help you to sort of reinvent how you think about the business, and how do you approach the whole process of setting up the company and growing your product?
Yeah, I think exactly that. I think it rounds you out. They focus... The application process into an accelerator is quite stringent. There was about four different rounds. I think 2,000 applied, and I think 10 finally actually get through. So there's a lot of businesses that may not have a great plan, but in the latter rounds, when you're doing the interview process and you're pitching a bit like you would on Shark Tank or something similar, you look around the room going, the competition here is really good. There's no way I'm getting through this round. And there was a few rounds of that. It was run very structured program. So they're taking on businesses they think have got a good plan and have got a good strategy. Mm-hmm. What they then do is kind of round it out with a kind of 3-month, very intensive program around what are the broader skills in marketing, et cetera. They give you good access to a strong alumni network. Mm-hmm. One of the things they really focus on is business pitching. So I would have been okay at that before.
Yeah.
But by business pitching, you get more secure in the plan, because every time you pitch it, people ask different questions. Well, have you thought about this product strategy? Have you really established product market fit? And that, I think, gives you a very solid foundation.
That's interesting. And thank you for sharing this story, because when you are talking to a founder who is already very successful in the market, and you're flashing back, and you thank you for being very open, because I think this is very valuable for anybody who is at the start point now. So what's your, let's say, net biggest lesson from this particular long journey and probably very risky journey?
I think the biggest takeaway, I think certainly to any startup, goes for an accelerator, because that's a great filter mechanism. Because a lot of people have an idea and they'll speak to their friends, and their friends are their friends. It's like, mm-hmm. Oh, that's a great idea. Everyone loves an idea. The execution is the game. Mm. And I think going through an accelerator program, they're pretty good at filtering out what they think is going to work and what's not going to work. And so I think I'd certainly recommend an accelerator program. I would really recommend getting as many mentors or people you can speak to that doesn't have to be an official capacity. That can just be going, hey, can I grab you for a coffee? I'd love to get your perspective on this. But people have gone through that journey beforehand. And speaking to investors, even on an informal basis earlier on, because there's a pretty seismic difference between someone thinking your idea is good and someone going to cut you a check.
Yeah, got you. No, that's pretty crisp and straightforward. Thank you for that. My question to you is, you mentioned that at the time when you were just trying to pitch your business on your solution, so you kind of, you saw the competition. And now when you've got HubPay as a solution, established solution in the market, what makes HubPay different? And has it changed from the moment when you pitched to the moment where you are now?
I think we've been remarkably consistent in terms of our assessment of the market opportunity and what we wanted to build. Yeah. We wanted to drive financial inclusion by offering a retail and a corporate solution. We started with retail.
Yeah.
And then we will expand it out to corporate. I would have liked to have done corporate earlier. It's just a bit more complicated to do. And so I think that overall mission is still very much intact. I think what sets us apart is on the retail solution, we were the first digital wallet only. You had a lot of ones with banks or exchange houses. You didn't have a pure fintech play. I think some of the benefit of that, you probably realize as you get bigger, because in fintech, you still need economies of scale. And I'd say now we're the only solution doing both retail and corporate. We've got a very good corporate solution, web-based. Our retail solution is app-based. And the corporate solution is building out quite quickly.
Interesting. So is the product evolution mainly coming from you as an inspiration, or are you are you working with the team that you've hired to help you to develop that product?
In terms of like product vision strategy, it probably is still mainly myself that's probably driving that forward. And I think it always is in the first years in any kind of tech business, fintech or otherwise. I think as that evolves out, your team gets larger and you bring in people who've got different perspectives. And right now we're still a UAE business.
Yeah.
Now I've been in the UAE since I came out here during 2016.
Yeah.
And I started in the research around this around 17, 18, and then into the accelerator in 2019. So I've got a pretty good understanding of this market. If we were to expand out into Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which has just released a new license for fintechs, I think we would definitely have rely on more people in that market who have been on the ground there and understand it very well. And so I think that's as you launch into different markets and different product stacks, you really do are going to rely on expertise from people who spent time doing it.
But as a leader, for example, how do you stay updated on the trends and what's happening in the industry and in the market? And how does it impact the vision around your product? Probably let's connect these to your things.
Well, I think, you know, market relevance, you know, we're like every tech company here on Slack, and you've got a nice channel on that, you know, market intel.
Yeah.
And so everyone's posting that every single day. So my first really 40 minutes in the morning, I'll come and have breakfast at work. I'm reading that with a coffee and seeing where everything's posted. It could be from the Financial Times to TechCrunch to Gulf News to see what's going on. Mm. And so I think that's a very good reference point. And then you're speaking out to people in the market. So that gives you a good kind of perspective of what's going on. I think one of the realities once you realize in the market is you hear from any market, it could be established, it could be tech, there's a lot of noise. And there's a lot of noise about, oh, this is about to launch, or this is going to happen. There's a pretty big gap between what's talked about and what actually gets executed.
Interesting.
And so I would say a lot of people go, oh, you know, the market's really saturated. Mm-hmm. No, it's not actually. There's only a handful of players operating. There is. And so I think there is still a very long way to go in our initial kind of plan around retail and corporate in the UAE. And so we're sticking to the same kind of game plan right now. That will evolve over the next few years, but there's nothing in the market noise to see to have shifted that landscape massively yet.
But do you kind of, you collaborate within your team, you discuss these updates, is it something that is part of your everyday routine? I mean, probably not everyday routine, but do you have somebody in the team that you discuss it? How do you foster this? Let's say vision discussion or something.
Yeah, I think, well, I think it goes back to your original, your first question about in person or over Zoom. In person, you've got all your meetings quite structured throughout the day, but it's almost the, you know, the coffee counter chat that these things come out in where, oh, did you hear about this today, right? Or did you hear Binance is launching in market? Or there's this new cool fintech that's focusing on an insurance solution. So I think it's those kind of in-between conversations and stuff's on the fly, and then you might grab somebody, you know, have you heard about this? What's going on there? The longer term vision kind of discussions, I think, happen in kind of two formats. One is in quite a structured way with kind of head of product and head of engineering, and we've got a strong team in that space, split across both the UAE and the UK. And then the other sessions, and we were just talking about this morning, we're going to, you know, go out for dinner, where you're in a slightly different setting, you're in a more relaxed time frame, there's not a specific agenda. And that's kind of, how are you feeling about things? What's your read right now in terms of where we are, versus where the market's at and where the opportunity is?
That's interesting. How big is your team now?
67.
67 people. Yeah, so it's still probably like you can keep it very casual from that perspective, like how you discuss things.
Yeah, certainly. I think we've got a pretty flat structure. And we have very much an open kind of forum in the office where everyone kind of talks to everyone, and everyone's encouraged to do so.
Yep.
You want to empower people because you want to have that feedback. You know, we've got a really diverse team. We've got Filipino nationals, Indian nationals, and what you want to hear about, what are they thinking about, what are they seeing? You've got people who most of us are immigrants into the UAE. And so you've come from markets where a huge amount could be happening. And it's great to get different people's perspectives on that. So I think that's one of the benefits of the UAE, and what they've fostered here is it's created this melting pot of a lot of different people from many different places.
You mentioned that you actually, as a leader, you get yourself updated with different sources, like local news, mm-hmm. maybe global news.
Yeah.
So we're talking about some form of media here, right?
Sure.
So are you somehow thinking of the media being a great source for Happy, a great source of marketing for Happy, a great source of, exposure, a great channel for you to share your thought leadership message? So what were you doing from that perspective, or are you planning to do anything from that perspective? And do you think that could play a good role?
Well, to date, in short, no. We've done pretty little because we were doing retail the last 2 years, and the most effective way to reach your market there is predominantly growth hacking. That's if you look at an ROI solution there. Mm-hmm. If you look at something more in a corporate solution, you need to build up kind of trust, kind of experience the market is much more kind of valued. If you also think about how businesses consume intel, they're often reading business publications, or they are individuals listening to podcasts, etc. And so I think it's got more relevance for this now, hence why I'm sitting down with you today. So I think that's much more important, especially as we're seeing the corporate landscape shift so significantly in the UAE. Mm-hmm. The UAE has established itself previously initially as kind of a hub, and people were kind of, it was almost travel, right? Then trade become far more significant. Now it is not just trade, but it's manufacturing, it's science. They're hosting COP this year. The way it's shifting is huge. Yeah. And the businesses we're meeting are enormously different. So the requirement of what they require in terms of products and services is also likewise shifting. And so I think that's when having more active discussion about how you see that landscape shifting and how you're a part of it, or you're hopefully driving it forward, is probably more relevant.
And but the good news, you're right at the right time, I would say. So it's not too late to start, I think,
to get in.
A podcast is just getting more and more popular in the UAE. So hopefully we'll see you more on different podcasts. But I wanted to ask you something else. So what were the most remarkable milestones that Happy has gone through so far?
I'd say, I think we were very pleased to be the first fintech to get licensed in the UAE. We were the first startup anyhow to get licensed out of the ADGM. And so we got the Cat 3C license, which is effectively a digital wallet license. You can do both retail and corporate, and you can hold money. And so we were pleased with that one. I think the milestone also be getting a license in Pakistan. So we got an EMI license there. We're the only fintech globally to have a UAE and Pakistan license, even though we haven't quite begun trading there yet. So I think those kind of launches from a regulatory standpoint, because we are a big fan of regulation, we think it's really important to go through the official channels to protect both your customers, your investors, and be a positive player in the market and the ecosystem. On the product side, I think what we're really happy with is how we've built out the corporate suite. So we've got a very strong web portal. We can onboard businesses within a few hours if we get all the documents. We can accept inward payments and do outward payments to pretty much anywhere in the world. And that, we think, is becoming really relevant to the UAE with just the diversity of businesses we're seeing. So, I mean, just, you know, yesterday we're dealing with somebody who is doing agri-commodities, so taking trading crops in and out of Africa, looking for a more reliable payment solution, looking for a better web portal solution. And that's something that's driving, you know, food supply globally. And so it's great to be getting access to these businesses and having a product that's adding value to them. And so I think, you know, the milestones around that foundation block that regulation gave us, and then building out the kind of product capabilities as quickly as we have has been rewarding to see.
That's great. And do you have, I mean, there was definitely remarkable milestones and a big journey. Do you have any culture how you celebrate it within your team? I mean, probably you as a leader, how do you sort of celebrate your milestones?
I think, you know, you make the usual kind of announcement. You make a few usual announcements on your kind of social media channels. I think with the team, we try and get them out. We've got a few people in the team who are always leading kind of social, and we've got Kwan. So we'll all get out together as a team. I think, you know, in terms of big kind of marquee kind of celebrations, I think that comes when you get bigger and you make a lot more money, so you can afford to do it. I think in the early days, it's, you know, you do celebrate and it's important to do so, but your head's down quite quickly again because you're back to working.
Yeah, definitely. There's still a lot to do and there's no time to sort of stop and, I don't know, wait for something. And speaking about that, what do you think, what are the trends? How do you foresee the fintech industry development? How will this ecosystem going to develop going forward?
I think in the near term for us in the UAE, I think it's going to be around the corporate build out. Mm-hmm. I think just a sheer number. We were down at the Dubai Chamber of Commerce the other day for a talk on Africa trade. And Dubai Chamber of Commerce, I think, has got 23 different offices from Beijing across to Lagos, where they have their own team members on the ground getting companies from there to come back to UAE and set up a business here. We were speaking to somebody at the DMCC the other day. They had an excess of 20,000 businesses registered there. I think the way that's growing out, I think it's going to be really relevant for us to see how much more products can we do there on the FX payment side, on more complicated solutions like derivative side. And I think the scope of that and the features around the product portal for those businesses will really kind of keep us busy for the next kind of couple of years. Mm. And speaking on supply chains and on the sustainability around on supply chains. So I'm getting to sit down with one of the lead investors in the Giving Movement, which has been a very popular brand here and internationally.
Wow.
And also other kind of people who have worked on building out global supply chains, and now so many of them are coming through the UAE. So I think the near term, that's it. I think the wider ecosystem, we haven't even begun to see that get going yet. I think you've seen kind of phase one or phase two in a lot of markets. I think some of the big trends are just beginning to emerge in that space.
Interesting. When it comes to you personally, is there any business or industry trend that excites you the most as the person who represents this industry?
I think from a HubPay point of view right now in the UAE, what we're focused about most is probably the trade with Africa, because if you actually look at the demographic makeup of the UAE, we had a huge, you know, some people from Europe, a huge amount from Asia, and Africa was probably a smaller percentage. It seems as the growth of these economies, especially the larger economies in Africa like Kenya and Nigeria, is growing up is expanding faster, the trade lines are getting far more significant. And so working with those kind of businesses, sending payments out to Kenya for, let's say, you know, paying for crops that they're bringing back from Kenya, whether it be kind of sesame seed or cashew nuts and the broader agro commodities, we think that's really exciting. And we see that growing rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think in the near term, that's very exciting. I think in the longer term, from a HubPay perspective, is do we move from payments into other financial products,
mm-hmm.
whether that's in the UAE or indeed in Pakistan? I think we'll probably be taking quite a close look, or we are taking quite a close look at KSA. And what's happening there, and expanding out into that space. So I think UAE's got a lot to offer the next 2-3 mm-hmm. years. I think then the broader region is very exciting.
So it's basically the expansion of the geo that excites you the most. Interesting. Yeah. So what would you recommend to, let's say, probably those who are in the fintech industry, or probably those who are in the leadership? What kind of, books, probably podcasts would you recommend for skill growth
sure.
in general?
So in terms of books, I've read a number of nonfiction over my time. I think most nonfiction can be summarized down quite succinctly. So there's solutions out there like Get Abstract, right? Often you see mm-hmm. nonfiction books, and they take a whole book to really what could be distilled down to about 4 pages in terms of key points.
Oh, okay.
And so I would say, do I do this enough myself? Absolutely not. But I think using Get Abstract to read, right, what are the top 10 business books that have come out this year?
Right.
Or indeed books on tech or environment. So I think the FT this morning just released their books of 2023.
Yeah.
And it was really good. They had a section on business, but then a section on technology.
Yeah.
And a section on environmental sustainability. Right. And so there's some really good ones there. I think one book that stands out, and it's probably cliche to say, is Ben Horowitz's book, A Hard Thing About Hard Things. And that's his personal journey in terms of him going from his Netscape moments in the early days in Silicon Valley to building the most successful venture fund in the world, Andreessen Horowitz. Mm. And he talks about the struggle and the journey there, but in a very dynamic way. So it's very interesting reading.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'll definitely refer to that book. If you were to choose any mentor in the world, who would that be?
Tough one. I would say someone who's been successful in a number of areas. I would say someone who's been successful in business and someone who's been successful in development. Because I think especially in more emerging markets, the development sector does have a very interesting understanding of kind of grassroots, et cetera. So we talked about someone like Muhammad Yunus.
Yeah.
I would say, I think someone like Bill Gates, utterly dominant in technology and enormously successful. He is the reason that so much of the tech sector built out the way it has. And also the fact he's taken his time and his kind of retirement years to try and beat polio is pretty inspiring. If you look at one of the companies I actually was looking to try and get a job with when I first moved out here, before I realized I probably didn't have the skill set for it. But if you look at what they've achieved in places like Nigeria and Pakistan, and their approaches around renewable energy and solving some of the issues that the Sustainable Development Goals of the UN try and relate to, I find that inspiring. And that really interesting. And he is focused on execution. You know, he's pretty uncompromising in that area. But I think, you know, if I ever got to the higher levels of success in business, it'd be great to bounce a few ideas of someone like that.
That's a great answer. If you were to choose to lead a team of risk takers, leveraging creativity, or let's say structure, operation, and stability, so what would you choose?
The second. I mean, you need it.
No, that's cool.
I'd say right now it'd be the second. I think there's more than enough opportunities out there to execute on. Everyone's got ideas every day. It really comes down to how you execute, and you need to do that in a very structured way. And so if you look at where we're at the payment space here, we speaking to businesses every day, and we've already established product market fit.
Yeah.
What we need to now know is making sure, are the payment capabilities we're building working on time?
Yeah.
Is the product journey absolutely precise? What's the analysis in terms of the dropout, in terms of the conversion funnel? So that's how you win. And so I think that's really key. I think I would like to speak to, and I'd like to spend more time doing this in terms of people who are looking more creatively around further solutions. I think we've got enough solutions in our pipeline in the next 2-3 years to keep us more than occupied. So I think there's a second phase here when you begin to diversify out, and that's when you need probably a bit more creative thought. I would say the people in terms of, let's say if you were to launch in a Pakistan, the people who are going to take that forward in terms of product solution there, I'd be really keen on finding 2 or 3 people who have got a very good product idea and try and fold them into the team.
Good. Nice. Yeah. If you were to focus on one function within your own company, what would that be?
Well, right now it's sales.
Sales?
That's the biggest drive.
Are you enjoying that?
Yeah, I think I am.
Pretty much something that you enjoy a lot?
I'd say so. Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a CEO and founder,
right,
fundraising takes up a huge amount of your time.
Mm.
And a lot of people find it the hardest part because it is. But if you don't enjoy that on some level, and it is a big grind, and there's some days you definitely get pretty frustrated with it. But if you don't enjoy that piece of it, if you don't enjoy the grind of the business and the day-to-day, there's no way you're going to sustain it. Because it sacrifices too much time, too much stress. You've got to enjoy the sales of that. The bottom line as a CEO is you've really only got 3 jobs. You've got a set, a vision, and a strategy. You have to bring in people and get them to row together. And you have to bring in the money.
Mm-hmm.
And that money can either be in fundraising or can be revenues through the door. But you do have to be able to do that.
Right. Interesting. Yeah. Because, you know, different founders, they pick different functions. But absolutely, no, I respect sales. It's something that is definitely going to bring you up to your, your financial success for sure. I've got a few other questions that I actually had on my list. Just to learn a little bit more about your day-to-day routine.
Sure.
Like tea or coffee to keep you productive, but then you answered it.
Yeah. I mean, the fact I've got my coffee sitting in front of me and this is my 4th one today.
I thought probably irrelevant. And then I also had another one, which is funny. I wanted to ask you, Zoom or Google Meet?
Zoom. I thank Zoom. Google Meet's always difficult on the browser. You're flicking between it. Zoom works well.
Yeah, I love Zoom as well. Well, thank you very much for this amazing conversation. I really enjoyed a lot. I learned a little more about you as a personality, about your leadership style. Enjoy your 4th cup of coffee and hope to see you again soon.
Thank you, Laura. Thanks very much for having me.